org.
Hello, welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today we are joined by Louisiana Public Broadcasting CEO and President, Ms. Beth Courtney. Ms. Courtney was born in Shreveport. She went to high school in Punahou, Hawaii, and then graduated in Biloxi, Mississippi. She went to college at LSU, got a degree in education, a bachelor's. Then she went to work as a reporter for the Capitol Bureau. Somewhere in there, got a history master's with a minor in government, started working and was named director of LPB, Louisiana Public Broadcast, in 1985, which takes us back. She's had a distinguished career, some of which we're going to talk about today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Pearson.
Your career in public broadcasting covers, I mean, from the inception. I mean, I guess it goes back to 1957, but you were came along not that much longer in terms of doing it. So what's it been like? I mean, it's a wild ride, huh?
Indeed. It feels like we're always under, you know, duress and in jeopardy. But on the other hand, I think that it's been an exciting ride. And it's one that every day I wake up and I think we need public broadcasting more than ever. And so it's been a wonderful, wonderful career for me. And I believe in starting to do something, sticking with it.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. We need public broadcasting. So make the argument for public broadcasting. Why do we need it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I can make the argument because when there was a contract with America, when Newt Gingrich first went in, one of the things he wanted to do was unfund the arts, unfund the humanities, and public broadcasting. And I had the pleasure of going to Washington and testifying before the House Appropriations Committee. Bob Livingston.
That would be a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Okay. It was a pleasure for me because I believed in it so much. And I was naive enough to think that I could actually say what I wanted to say and you didn't have to write everything out, which you do have to do for the record. But I pushed it kind of aside and really spoke from the heart. And one of the things that I've realized through the years, and it's true today as it was when I testified before, if you've ever seen a child learn their letters and numbers from Sesame Street or from Mr. Rogers, as from all of the new shows we're doing now, which are, you know, Word Girl, Splash and Bubbles. A lot of the Jim Henson characters are now carrying over into STEM, science, technology, engineering, math, information. But it's important to use this powerful tools, the tools of technology and television, to educate young people. And, I mean, I think it is so important. I see it needed in Louisiana, and I see it important. And I think right now, very valuable. We need still early childhood education. We've all come to the conclusion it's very important for children to learn this now. Everyone says this. This is not a divide between Republicans or Democrats. It simply says that giving our children the best opportunity is so important. That's important. The other thing that I've seen is we open a window on the world to people. And one of my favorite stories is a young man. I went to the finals in Louisiana of the Geography Bee, and it was eighth graders. And we went up to the finalist who won, a very bright young African-American fellow who said, we asked him, how did you prepare for the Geography Bee? And he said, I watched Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego on LPB. And I went, get the camera, do a spot with him right now. But what I discovered was he and his mother had taken the bus to the campus for this final, and they didn't own a car. And the only time he'd been outside of Baton Rouge at this point was to go on a school field trip to the nuclear power plant. And he said, you know, when I watch LPB, I dream about going other places in the world. And other places. And I said, we are a window on the world for this young man. And so it just, you know, it makes you feel so, this makes a difference. So the early childhood education. But I also think it's important to have a place, and public radio does this as well, here, where you can have civil discourse. And I'm one of those people who've always believed that it's important to talk about complex issues. And that doesn't mean scream at one another. It doesn't mean doing rages and rants on Facebook. It means literally, let's talk about a complicated story. And we've tried to do that. And I think it's important for all of us to talk with one another and not just in an echo chamber. And then finally, gosh, in Louisiana, we have the best stories in the world to tell. We have the most wonderful people, fantastic history. Remember, I'm a history major. Fabulous stories, but also wonderful music to share with the country, but characters and tales that need to be told, and not by somebody outside of Louisiana, but right here.
That's a strong argument. How would you respond to it's one I'm in sympathy with, but I'm sure people say, yeah, but we don't really need public television anymore because there are a zillion stations out there. And you know, so they're stations that focus strictly on kids. There's the History Channel. There are all kinds of stations that do all these different kinds of things. So why do we need a public? Why does the public need to provide a station?
Well, if you look at children's programs, let's start with that. We actually spend some time measuring the results of these programs. There's a lot of research that goes into the background of these. If we're trying to teach letters and numbers if you're moving forward, you can see the change. You have incredible academic research that says this is the best way of doing it. And then we test it to see if it works. It's not simply it's a cartoon. It literally is an educational tool. And all of our shows have deep research behind them. And we are making sure that they're available to all children. And I think that we actually have camps where we test some of this out. So the whole Ready to Learn program says that if you have a child prepared to go into kindergarten, then they are going to succeed in life. Unfortunately, some of our children in this state go without any preparation, and then they're already behind. So I think it's incredibly important. That is a public good that needs to be done. And just because you have Books a Million or Barnes & Noble doesn't mean you shouldn't have a public library. So I'm not saying you shouldn't have commercial ventures, but you should. Look at Bravo and Arts and Entertainment on the cable side. They were going to do all kinds of wonderful operas and interesting music and everything. They devolved into, I don't know, reality shows. So it's because their business model says they need to earn money for their stakeholders, I suppose. So it's a commercial venture. So I think in this rich country that we have, there's enough to have a public broadcasting and a commercial broadcasting.
Well, of course, I'm sold on that as well. And we're sitting in a public station supported by public funds.
In a public university.
Exactly. So, soon perhaps not to be given government funding.
Well, that's what I would say. And let me just make it very clear that the public part of the public broadcasting is not all of our programs. All of our programs in Louisiana are totally funded by individual contributions or underwriting private funding.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So what's your funding model structure? How does that work?
The funding structure pretty much is we get some state funding that literally pays for the base infrastructure. That's land leases, towers, interconnection, just allow us to be on the air. And then all of the programs are funded by private funding, be it underwriting or voluntary contributions. I always say sometimes, like, I rely on the kindness of strangers. What is that from A Streetcar Named Desire? But absolutely, we so it's a people talk about public-private partnership, but it truly is that. And we were cut 43% during the Jindal years, and so we've had to be very, very, very entrepreneurial. And I know ULL is familiar with that and what we've had to do. So, I think that's a strong funding model, that if you have both and you understand where you're going. And we pinch every penny.
Let's talk about that for a second. So you experienced deep cuts during the Jindal era. Those cuts have not been made up since then. So that became the new reality. Is that still the new baseline, so to speak?
That's about the baseline. We were very happy that during this last multiple special sessions, we were not cut anymore. And frankly, I am so small that I can go in and say, here is our bill for the utilities. Would you like me to shut off Lafayette or Shreveport or Monroe or Alexandria? Or
No
Baton
death,
Rouge.
No doubt that's very effective.
Well, but that's a fact because I can literally show the bill. So it's not complicated. Nobody's hiding anything, and it's very transparent. And we are fortunate that people will call up and say, we want to fund this program. We've done some fabulous things that have been based in West Louisiana, and
we've had
funding for that.
Let's talk about some programs. So what's kind of a model for the way LPB works and some program you've done over the last few years that you think brings out something special about LPB?
Well, I love working with Zachary Richard. He's done a terrific job. And so we've done documentaries on the Cajun people and their history. We've done it going up to Canada and working with him in partnership. But most recently, we did Atakapa, which was, of course, the musical version of this same story. And it has been so well received around the country. We have shared the story with our own people in Louisiana, but we've also then shared it with the rest of the country. And he is such a joy to work with. His music is so wonderful. It was a terrific example of something we really enjoyed doing, and people have appreciated it so much. I like telling our own story much more than having the people from Massachusetts come down and tell us Fat Man Goes to Cajun Country or something, riding a bicycle through. You know, I like us telling our own story to the rest of the country.
Well, we have such an interesting story to tell, too. One thing I think about Louisiana that's true, and that is that in some ways we have a recognizable brand and a branding, and we have an image in people's minds, and they think of something when they think about Louisiana that's very recognizable and very approachable. And I think that gives us a little bit of an advantage in some ways over some states that are perhaps less colorful.
Oh, I think so. Billy Tozan was always saying that. I want the He would make fun of the Midwest when I would go up and testify, and he'd talk about how many stories we have here in Louisiana. And so we truly have an interesting people and interesting history. One of the things that I'm proudest of, and you made reference to the fact that my undergraduate degree was I'm a teacher at heart, and I believe these tools can teach us wonderful things. And I was looking at some of the textbooks on Louisiana history, and they were sort of dry. And I was like, we have a fascinating history. And our 6-part Louisiana history, we had a book that went along with it. We have all these wonderful original things. And so I'm very proud of that.
That's amazing. You know, it takes a special gift to make Louisiana history boring,
doesn't
it?
It does. It does.
It's wild. Well, we are talking today to Beth Courtney, who is, of course, the president and CEO of Louisiana Public Broadcast. And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk some more.
KRVS listeners are proud of their communities, schools, businesses, and homes. They care about where they live and improving their lives. Are these listeners your customers? They should be. Sponsor programming on KRVS. Call 337-482-1437.
Bring the peanut butter because I'm bringing the jam on the Zydeco Stomp. I'm Herman Fuselier reminding you that every Saturday it's you and me till 3 with the best in Zydeco blues and old school R&B on KRVS. The music's so good you want to get on your telephone and call somebody and tell them I'm jamming with the Zydeco Stomp. Noon Saturdays only on KRVS. Lafayette, Lake Charles. Et toi, manque les pasha.
Welcome back to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. We're talking today with Ms. Beth Courtney, who is president and CEO of LPB. You've had as a storied career. I don't know that there's ever been anyone quite like you in Louisiana broadcast history, so to speak. When you look back, what are some of the, if you'd say, highlights, honors, proudest moments, some of the things that really stick out?
One of the things that I guess I remember most would be the tension around all of the debates for governor that we've had. I began my career covering the state capitol, and I showed up in 1972, and Edwin Edwards was the governor, and I thought everyone was like Edwin Edwards. And little did we know that certainly the humor, the spontaneity that he had was very unusual for a governor. But so I look back on the times that we had between the debate. I was very young, and I was the moderator between Edwin Edwards and Dave Treen. And that's when Edwards said to Dave Treen, it takes you, what, 2 hours to watch 60 Minutes? I came, but I was trying to think of my next question, you know. And I was like, oh, gosh, I had to do that one. And then I remember also when we were running when we had everybody running, Sonny Mouton, Paul Hardy, Dave Treen, Louis Lambert, we were doing a debate, and I was in Baton Rouge, and on WYS in New Orleans was they had the other candidates. And I remember at the time I also had Mr. None of the Above on because we had all the candidates there. And I remember I had to take my pencil, like my old teacher, and rap somebody on the knuckles because they were whining in between things. And I think to myself, I cannot believe I'm doing this. Sonny Mouton was my favorite candidate because he would tell me things like, you know, they convinced me, the people doing my campaigns, that I was 6 feet tall. And, of course, he was very short, and he was just a wonderful man. So that was so interesting, being around people like that. I adored Dave Treen because he was the nicest man in the world. But he couldn't believe that everyone wasn't very logical like he was logical. So he was just wonderful and a joy to be with. When my husband and I were married, and we were just talking about this just recently, we've been married a little over 35 years now. Our minister, who is now our senior minister at our church, was the associate minister, pastor, and he married us at our home. And at that time, Edwin Edwards was a guest. Dave Treen was the current governor. We had Bobby Freeman was there. They were all in attendance. We had everyone, and the mayor of Baton Rouge was Pat Screen. So they stopped, and we had everyone there. And our minister was more frightened than we were. He was sweating bullets, and we have a videotape. And he was confessed to us last Sunday. He said, you know, I was very nervous. I thought I was having a heart attack during your wedding. I said, well, we were used to being on camera. Because he was working for Channel 2 and I was working for LPB. And so that was it was sort of a time where we thought everything was going to be interesting like that. And everything was happening and always awfully exciting. So that was exciting. But the debates have always been stressful. They've always been stressful because you wanted to ask serious questions. And I'm a good student and I believe you should study. And I would be studying all of the policy matters that we should talk about, and people only remember the bon mots or the mistakes or something like that. But as a professor, you know, I was dutifully reading up on that. And this last series in which John Bell and David Vitter was very tense because everybody has had so many consultants now. They've been told, don't answer questions. Don't talk to reporters. Don't do this. And everything is in the spin. And you want to say to people, it's not in the spin. Let's listen to it for yourself. And I want you to make up your own mind about this issue. And that's one of the things I've always tried to do. I've tried to be very nonpartisan in everything I've done. But I want people to have the opportunity to say their own piece. And we've tried to do that always and not have a point of view. Jim Lehrer and McNeil Lehrer NewsHour, he used to say to me, Beth, you shouldn't have any adjectives in your newscast. I went, no adjectives, Jim? He said, yes, because I don't want anybody to have, you know, an impression of where I am standing on any issue. I want to be pure nonpartisan. So, I mean, that's pretty strict.
That is pretty strict. Let's talk about that just a little bit. So I'm hearing some words, logical, nonpartisan, non-emotional. Is that possible today? I mean, things seem so charged in this environment.
Well, that's why we have a special role then to play. We actually had a conversation on our program Public Square about Confederate monuments before they had the controversy in New Orleans about taking everything down. We literally had in our studio, we had the president of the Sons of the Confederacy and we had the head of the NAACP. And we had people having a conversation about what it meant to different people. And it was quite civil.
So there were no chairs thrown,
no one shouted,
there were no chants from the...
No. Okay. But it truly was not a spin either, because that's one of the things we don't want people to come away with. But we actually had this conversation. And I think each side can listen to another side. One of the important things in a democracy, I think, is listening to others and maybe listening to somebody that you disagree with. I mean, I think that's important. So an educated populace is important in a democracy, and listening to others. And that's something that I sort of worry about, that if you only listen or watch things that you agree with, well, then how do you ever expand your horizons?
It's one of the things that I say over and over to people is, well, have you listened to some other viewpoint? Have you checked out another source? I mean, have you turned on LPB, or have you listened to something that's not specifically hitting you with a point of view? Most people don't. I think we live in an echo chamber that's magnified by social media, sadly, and so it it confirms our bias, and it makes it very difficult. It makes these things emotional. You don't moderate debates much anymore, do you?
Well, I did this last go round. So I've done it every time, frankly.
Frankly, okay.
So because I
is that because you can't stay away? Or?
A little bit of both, I confess. I kind of like to be in the fray. I say to somebody, you see people on television, and you think the anchors are actually the ones in charge. They're not. You know, it's the people behind the scenes. It's the producers. You look at the big newscasts, and I always want to know, who's the producer? Who's writing that script? Now, that doesn't mean the other people aren't bright. It just means that, you know, there's a lot that goes into doing things. And I spend a lot of my days doing things that are more technical in nature. I always come into a big meeting with engineers and say, are we on the air with pictures and sound? I mean, because that's a big thing to ask, because we run a whole statewide network. And I guess the fun part for me is doing the TV part. But you asked me earlier about some of the highlights or lowlights.
Yes.
I guess one of the things that I have never really written about or talked about that much was Katrina. And during Katrina, we all, of course, were watching and thinking and listening and trying to know what was happening. We have a whole hurricane drill that goes on, because I have stations down in Lafayette and Lake Charles and on the coast. And I got a phone call from my colleagues at WWL, and they had moved to the LSU campus for one day. And they called me and said, Beth, may we come over to your studios, because we think we can put up a newscast, and we need you to come. And I said, come on, we're all in this together. So I will never forget, they all arrived. And for a period of time, for about a month or two, we were the epicenter of all world news, because I connect Louisiana via satellite transponder. And so I had everyone showing up. I had, you know, Japanese television, European, the BBC, everybody in the world. But we had to get special FCC clearance to carry WWL on one of my channels. And I looked out in the parking lot, and we had helicopters and a fuel dump. And I was signing little official things that looked like, yes, you may go into New Orleans, when everything was still devastated. And I will never forget Kathleen Babineau Blanco coming in to our studio. We were on emergency power, and we had a generator sort of leaking diesel fuel in the back, and we had to throw kitty litter out because it was diesel leaking everywhere. And Kathleen came in with Coach and one other staff person, and I was there with a cameraman and an engineer. And she said, Beth, I've just come from the Superdome. It's terrible. We have to get those people out. I'm going up on CNN to tell them right now what's happening. That was her first visit. And I am just like, you know, I'm a military kid. You talked about earlier, but I grew up moving around. My dad was in the Air Force, and I'm in the all everybody on deck now. And I said, okay, Kathleen, here, let me comb your hair. Let's get up here. Let's tell the whole country what's happening in Louisiana. And I will never forget that moment. But I felt through that entire month that I was literally giving information to people that desperately needed it all around the country, and especially those in the state. And I felt like that's why we have a state network. The people who had evacuated out of New Orleans, they were in Shreveport, or they were over in Houston, and I could share their story with them as well. So I think that's one of our really important things to do. So we if a disaster comes, we devote one of our channels totally to giving information out like that. And I think that's so important for us to do. But I will never – and I haven't really written it all down because I was still trying to do. I haven't had a chance to reflect.
We are talking today with Beth Courtney, who, of course, is president and CEO of LPB. Those are wonderful experiences. Kathleen Blanco has been a supporter of this program and, in fact, I think holds the record for most appearances. She was on recently talking about someone that you just mentioned, Sunny Mouton, you know, who, of course, is a local legend, right? Now, you've been involved not just with LPB but also with national public broadcast. Would you talk about that just a little bit?
Well, I've had the pleasure of being on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. So I was the professional representative on, and they were mainly major donors to either the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. And so, therefore, it was a very interesting experience for me. I had to go through all of the – as if I were going to be ambassador to, I don't know, France. And so they had to investigate me, FBI and all this sort of stuff. Wow. And it was so interesting. One of my favorites was a lady who was on my board and a friend of my mother's said that the FBI had come by her house to check up on me, and she hoped I was okay. And they asked if I had ever done drugs, and she said, oh, her daddy would kill her. And the FBI agent told me that was the funniest response he'd ever heard. No. And so, therefore, I had to put down every contribution I'd ever had, every gift. And I was like, wow, my husband, my family, nobody's really giving me any gifts. And I went – I had to testify before John McCain's committee as I – confirmation hearings. Right. I went through all of that. So that was a real experience.
So you know what it's like to testify to Congress.
I do. Yeah. And that one was sort of because they asked me about Bill Moyers and he was too liberal. And I said, well, what we try and do is if somebody comes on, we then try and have somebody else with another point of view.
Can we just a quick question there? Sometimes people say NPR or LPB or has kind of a liberal bent. What would you say to that?
I do not see that in PBS land. I think that we've tried very hard not to do that. I think some individual reporters probably have that perspective. And as you indicated earlier, it's hard not to have a perspective. But we work very hard at not having – leaning one way or the other. And that is a real challenge. So I've had to testify – previously, I said Livingston's committee appropriation, but also several times before Billy Tozan's committee as well when he was commerce. Mm-hmm, so,
well, yeah, it's a real challenge. So they check who you give money to, so you stop giving money.
I never gave any money.
I know. That's the thing. You have to. Nor yard signs,
right,
nothing
no yard
like
signs.
That. So
exactly.
You're kind of a professional nonpartisan in your position. You kind of have to be. Because there are Republicans who support LPB and there are
absolutely
Democrats who support LPB.
Correct.
And the same thing here with KRVS, you know, Public Radio Lafayette.
But as in Lafayette, there's so many stories to tell.
There's
so much more to do. So I love being involved in public broadcasting. I love the fact that people tell me the programs that they like. And they let me know. And we take the phone calls.
We are talking and have been talking today with Beth Courtney, who is CEO and president of LPB. Thank you so much for coming to our show.
My pleasure. I love being here.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Have you ever heard a story that changed the way you saw the world?
I had witnessed the terrifying joy of unbearable responsibility.
We fight for identity, sometimes we kill for identity, but why is that?
I can't let my life be this, because if I give up right now, that's what my life will be.
I'm Guy Raz. Join me each week for inspiring stories on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Coming up tonight at 8 on KRVS.
Set your dial with a minor chord Thursday nights at 11 on KRVS 88.7 FM. discover production techniques, effects, instruments, amps, and the players who use them. That's a minor chord, KRVS.
KRVS, 88.7 FM.